from deep inside your radio.
And of course, your radio is getting shallower every day. I just want to alert you to that. Ladies and gentlemen, a new report from the Inspector General of the Department of... This should be in the Inspector General report. Well, you know, we'll put it there. That's how I roll. But a Florida church has... News of the godly, I say, then. A Florida church has caused outrage. Outrage. By turning away children, from its popular Sunday services in order to cater to a pastor who is a registered sex offender. You see how that works? You see it's a system? You see we can solve... The decision to allow convicted child molester Daryl Gilliard into the pulpit has, what do you think, angered neighboring pastors and members of the congregation of the Christ Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church, longer name next time, please, in Jacksonville, Florida. Gilliard, he's 49, is allowed no contact with minors under the terms of his release from a 3-year jail sentence for abusing a 15-year-old girl at another church 3 years ago. As a result, church leaders have made his services adults only. Bring your own popcorn box. Parishioners claim, only if you're Pee-wee here, parishioners claim security guards hired by the church have begun refusing admission to families with children, including a woman who tried to attend on Sunday with a 2-year-old boy. Instead, they say children are directed to remain off-site while Gilliard is preaching. They accuse the church of dismantling the playground to keep children away. Since Gilliard was hired last month, soon after his December release from jail, the church in Northside, one of Jacksonville's poorest, mostly black neighborhoods, has become the scene of angry exchanges between protesters and his supporters. So, he's livened up the neighborhood. That's the good news. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Let us try to stem the tide, to beautify our countryside. We offer you our hand. Let us try.
Well, perhaps you have read the news this week, and you know that there's been coverage of the settlement of the BP oil spill dispute with the private litigants, a settlement which involved BP pledging $7 billion, money that had already been accounted for in its $20 billion set-aside. That got covered, but what didn't get covered in the national news, as far as I could see, was a decision by the Court of Appeals in New Orleans, Louisiana, on Friday night. Now, just a little background. For those of you who may have seen the movie The Big Uneasy, you saw in that film Federal Judge Stanwood Duval reading portions of his decision from a lawsuit filed by six litigants, six ordinary New Orleanians from the east side of the city against the United States Army Corps of Engineers for negligence in the construction, design, and maintenance of the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet, commonly called the Mr. Go. A blistering 150-page opinion by the judge, which excoriated the Corps and called it guilty of criminal negligence. That's a quote. And ever since he issued that opinion a couple years ago, there's been concern about how the Corps immediately announced it would appeal. There's been concern about how the appeals court would rule. Generally, sort of an authority-friendly court, it was believed. Well, the news that got no national coverage that I could see on Friday was this. That court, the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, upheld Judge Stanwood Duval's ruling, finding the Corps responsible for flooding portions of the Lower Ninth Ward in St. Bernard Parish because of its failure to maintain Mr. Go. If upheld by the Supreme Court, the ruling could eventually result in residents, businesses, and local governments being reimbursed for damages for as much as $20 billion, three times the amount in the BP settlement. And by the way, all of it coming from you and me, because we fund the Corps. We own the Corps. Our president runs the Corps. By the way, the president called Sandra Fluck. He found the time to do that. He found no time to issue any statement on this decision. The decision found the Corps to be immune for damages from the flooding along the canal walls in the western side of New Orleans. But they agreed with Duval that the Failure to maintain Mr. Go was unrelated to the flood control activities represented by levees along its banks, and instead was the equivalent of a Navy captain failing to maintain a ship that crashes through a levee. Because of the soft soil, the weight of its structures depresses the land and causes flooding to nearby farms during a heavy rain. The government could argue the Army could have built dikes to prevent the flooding. That hypothetical solution does not transform the building of a base into a flood control activity or the failure to build dikes into negligence in flood control activity. The appeals court said the Corps of Engineers ignored the risks inherent in its construction of Mr. Go. The Corps would have to go to Congress to request money to pay for the claims. The federal government is likely to appeal this ruling to the full Fifth Circuit. This was a three-judge panel, and then to the Supreme Court. If the ruling's upheld, it would clear the way for others who filed claim forms in the year after Katrina with the Corps to request action on those forms. As many as 300,000 were filed. Maybe a third of those may be eligible for payment. This ruling could be used as precedent when those cases come to trial. That, of course, an incident, major disaster in this country involving hundreds, thousands of deaths, hundreds of thousands of people rendered homeless, jobless. Did you hear about it anywhere else? Good. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's how we treat our heroes. The Pentagon revealed this week that partial incinerated remains of some 9/11 victims who could not be identified. Arlington? No. Sent to a landfill. Well, that's what they did with the soldiers, so why wouldn't they? The number of victims involved was unclear, according to the Pentagon report. It involved some of those killed when the airplane struck the Pentagon and the other one that crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The Pentagon released the report by an independent committee that was asked to examine practices at the military's mortuary at Dover, Delaware. We don't think it should have happened, the committee chairman, retired General John Abizay, told the news conference. Strong language. Almost as strong as Mitt Romney on Rush Limbaugh. The panel was formed after an investigation revealed there was gross mismanagement, their word, at the Dover facility, and body parts had been lost on two occasions. The partial remains were cremated, then given to a biomedical waste disposal contractor who incinerated them and took them to a landfill. The report did not say precisely where the remains ended up. Abizade told reporters, I don't know that there's a way to find out. Landfill for heroes. It's a bumper sticker. It's a way of life. Hello, welcome to the show.
My passion runs deeper, and girl, I'm not afraid.
Could describe this week as one marked by too much passion. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry from the legacy, the historic Le Chaux Dôme, being reconstituted as a multi-purpose facility, which is inappropriate for both indoor and outdoor activities. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Chaux. I'll remember the name of the program shortly, but now, ladies and gentlemen,
I wish we were here for longer.
Oh, I do too. I think we have something else in mind.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, safe, too cheap to meet.
News of the Atom.
Save, too safe to meet. Save, safe, too safe to meet.
And our friend Addie is here baking in the Southern California springtime warmth.
Catching some rays and sending them right back.
That's cute. Radioactive contamination levels from Japan's crippled nuclear plant have fallen sharply since the accident, but will be, quote, chronic and lasting for many years. That's according to a French watchdog. I think they mean humans acting in a watchdog capacity, but you can't be sure. The initial contamination, otherwise it's a talking watchdog, you know, big news. The initial contamination linked to the accident has greatly declined, says Didier Champion, crisis manager at the Institute for Radiological Protection and Nuclear Safety. That doesn't mean there won't be any more. Far from it. Today and for many years to come, we will have a situation of chronic and lasting contamination of the environment, he said. So it wasn't a dog. It was essential for Japan to maintain vigilant monitoring of fruit, milk, mushrooms, game, and fish, Champion said. There are risks of chronic exposure at low dosage, and without care, this can build up over time. Well, who wouldn't be paying attention over time? Oh, humans. Deadline Washington, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission carried out 15 special inspections last year, spurred by potentially serious incidents at power plants. The Union of Concerned Scientists reported this week. They are an activist group which sometimes opposes nuclear power projects. A number of those near misses. Relax. It was a near miss. Occurred because plant operators and regulators, quote, either tolerated known problems or failed to address them adequately, the UCS said. The report also praises the NRC for instances where regulators did an outstanding job addressing safety problems before they could lead to a potentially dangerous situation. Last year's record shows the NRC is quite capable of being an effective watchdog. Except for the kibble, that protects the public and saves the nuclear industry from its worst tendencies, said the report. But the agency too often does not live up to its potential and becomes, what, a watch mouse? Lack supervision by the NRC has allowed some problems to worsen over the course of decades, according to the report, which said almost half of the 104 U.S. reactors still do not comply with a fire regulation the NRC established in 1980 and amended in 2004. But see, humans pay attention over the long term. We know that because an NRC report issued February, but receiving little public attention since then, calls to light 5 safety incidents at San Onofre, a nuclear generating station just south of Los Angeles. During an inspection completed late last year, 2 of the violations were identified and reported by the plant's operator, SoCal Edison. 3 more were self-revealing during inspections. None were considered significant with regard to plant safety. One of the very low safety significant violations concerned an incident last year where a diver was dismantling part of a steam generator on the plant's Unit 3 reactor in highly radioactive water. What could go wrong? Usually the diver would have a personal radiation alarm, as well as remote monitoring equipment to ensure not excessive exposure to radiation, don't you know? On this particular August day, last August 25th, the remote monitoring device malfunctioned. The project supervisor chose to continue work relying on mathematical calculations to determine the safe exposure time. Math will save you. The diver, however, ended up working in a different position than assumed in the calculations, resulting exposure to 60% more radiation than planned. His personal alarm did sound, but due to the seal on its wetsuit, he couldn't hear it. That wasn't a safety violation. That was just acute. Japan's Fukushima power plant remains fragile. Nearly a year after it suffered multiple meltdowns, its chief says this week, with makeshift equipment, some mended with tape. But it's that super tape that is certified for keeping crucial systems running.
Don't make fun of the tape.
Sorry. An independent report, meanwhile, revealed that the government downplayed the full danger in the days following the disaster and secretly considered evacuating Tokyo. Journalists given a tour of the Fukushima plant this week saw crumpled trucks and equipment still lying on the ground. A power pylon that collapsed in the tsunami, cutting electricity to the plant's vital cooling system and setting off the crisis, remained a mangled mess. Officials say the plant remains vulnerable. I have to admit, it's still rather fragile, said plant chief Takeshi Takahashi, who took the job in December after his predecessor resigned because of health reasons. Undisclosed health reasons. After the earthquake and tsunami, worry about the unfolding nuclear accident quickly commandeered international headlines. This is from Scientific American. Even after the situation was brought under relative control, public concern hung on the threat of radiation. A year out, public health experts agree, according to the Scientific American, that the radiation fears were overblown compared with the effects of radiation exposure from Fukushima. The number of expected fatalities are never going to be that large, says Thomas McCone of UC Berkeley School of Public Health. And some, including Richard Garfield, professor of clinical and international nursing. I want an international nurse at Columbia University. Go a step further. In terms of the health impact, the radiation, he says, is negligible. The radiation will cause very few, close to no deaths. Another such report, the health effect is extremely low, the health threat, even if certain areas near the crippled plant could be rendered off limits for years to come. That's according to a panel of American experts who've studied the case for the past year. From a radiological perspective, we expect the impact to be really, really minor, says Catherine Higley, a professor of nuclear engineering at Oregon State. We move now to Los Alamos National Laboratory. If a recent tussle between a local engineer and officials from there show anything, it's that one lab's error is another man's dilemma. A year ago, a local news source reported findings of small amounts of tritium in Santa Fe's water system in a particular well field. We've heard about tritium, haven't we? We know about tritium. It can cause birth defects and early miscarriages in women, among other problems, if consumed at high levels. It has been found at significant levels in groundwater near Los Alamos, a likely result of past nuclear weapons testing. Drinking a radionuclide is always a bad idea, said Mark Sardello, a local engineer and activist in Santa Fe, who's made public presentations about the tritium findings. Since December, he's been engaged in a drawn-out struggle with Los Alamos to get the data that supports the findings. Why would they want to make those available?
Because they're busy. They're busy breaking atoms.
Good point, Addie. At least 140,000 tons of sewage slush, ash, and soil contaminated with radioactive materials has yet to be disposed of in Tokyo and six prefectures in the Kanto region following the Fukushima crisis, according to Yomiuri newspaper. Under the central government, set criteria regarding radioactive materials, sewage sludge and ash with radiation levels up to 8,000 becquerels per kilogram can be put in landfills. I know one. Pentagon uses it. But an increasing number of final disposal sites refuse to accept contaminated sludge and ash even if it meets the government criteria, according to the Yomiuri Shimbun. In other situations, soil removed during decontamination work has been left at the original sites where it was supposed to be removed from. A mind-boggling 40,000 trillion becquerels of radioactive cesium, or twice the amount previously thought, may have been spewed from Fuk. Scientists now tell another Japanese newspaper. Michio Aoyama, a senior researcher at the Meteorological Research Institute, released the finding last week. The figure, which represents about 20% of the discharge during Chernobyl, is twice as large as previous estimates by research institutions in both Japan and abroad. Scientists believe about 30% of the radioactive substances discharged during the crisis ended up on land. The rest fell in the sea. What could be? It's the sea. It's our garbage dump. Nothing could possibly. This makes it especially difficult to accurately evaluate the total amount of radioactive materials released. Thus, seaborne data is essential to the process. TEPCO began pouring cement on a trial basis from a marine platform onto the seabed in a port near Fuk No. 1, the work is intended to cover 6 hectares of seabed inside the breakwaters, aiming to prevent radioactive cesium that accumulated there from spreading to the rest of the ocean. During the trial, TEPCO will determine what thickness of cement cover is effective for the purpose. Choppy waters due to adverse weather conditions had obstructed the work. That could never happen. Hey, check with BP about cement. They seem to know. Dominion Virginia Power has found elevated levels of a weak form of radioactivity in a sampling well at its North Anna, Virginia nuclear power station. The radiation, say it with me now, poses no hazard to the public. The staff of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has proposed 3 rules to address safety issues raised by the Fuk disaster. They're expected to add millions of dollars in costs for nuclear operation. But it's still cheap. Don't let those millions fool you. Omaha Public Power District officials have a troubled Fort Calhoun, Maryland plant facing the toughest regulatory scrutiny of any U.S. reactor in a decade. Officials sought this week to show regulators they realize the gravity of the situation. We're clearly not satisfied with our performance. We lost our edge, Gary Gates, president and chief executive officer of Omaha Public Power District, told the NRC. I want to assure you, we understand the seriousness. We have a sense of urgency to return Fort Calhoun to sustained high levels of performance. Lost their edge.
Hey, everybody needs it.
You are so right about that, Addie. Clean?
Yes.
Safe?
Yeah.
Cheap?
Well.
Nuclear power. Our friend the Atom checking in. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm a fan of those moments, those classic moments when a radio station decides enough is enough. It can't fight the battle anymore, and it's just going to change format. When I was a kid growing up, I was fascinated by the idea that they just would disappear, and the next day something. Or better yet, the classic example, first time I heard a really dramatic format change, some station in Los Angeles was changing format from some crappy thing to another crappy thing. But they needed to get rid of all their remaining listeners. I don't know why. They felt the need. Just, shoo, we're not here anymore. So what they did was over a weekend, they played 24 hours for 3 days running, Navajo Indian chants. You just turned on the station and it was 24. That got rid of them. Now, and it can be sudden. It can be dramatic. This is the last moment of a fledgling right-wing talk station in Melbourne, Australia, that gave up the ghost, although some of its staff wasn't aware of it until almost too late.
I wish we were here for longer, but we're not. As we always say, thank you for listening, and maybe we'll meet some other day down the line.
McCoy. Macquarie National News at 5. Rain tomorrow, 21 degrees. Good afternoon, I'm Amy Meehan. Julia Gillard is refusing to say whether Cabinet members pleaded with her not to install former New South Wales Premier Bob Carr as Foreign Minister. It's been suggested Defence Minister Stephen Smith wanted the job and wasn't happy about Mr Carr being parachuted in. Okay, I'm really sorry. I thought that I was still doing one last bulletin. Okay, no worries at all. I'm so sorry. I know you guys work your butts off and, no matter whatever, the ratings were one way or the other, it doesn't change the way you do your day. So I'm really sorry. No worries. Bye-bye.
Her voice changed a little bit. Do you notice? Changed a little less authoritative, a little more whiny. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Nice Corp. Big week, of course. James Murdoch quit. The son of Rupert, who was head of Nice Corp's operations in outside the United States, therefore responsible for the newspaper mess and the what Americans still continue to call the phone hacking scandal, although this week we've learned just how much bigger it is. The Deputy Assistant Commissioner of Scotland Yard, Sue Akers, testified this week that one public official, unidentified, received more than $120,000 from the still operating Rupert Murdoch-owned tabloid newspaper, The Sun. One journalist had spent more than $210,000 in paying sources, she said. Quote, the cases we are investigating are not ones involving the odd drink or meal to police officers or other public officials. Instead, these are cases in which arrests have been made involving the delivery of regular, frequent, and sometimes significant sums of money to small numbers of public officials by journalists. There appears, she continued, to have been a culture at The Sun of illegal payments, and systems have been created to facilitate such payments while hiding the identity of the officials receiving the money. Systems, unquote. Systems, you see, ladies and gentlemen. Not rogue. Systems. She said payments in cash and by check were made to police and staff at other organizations, including the military. It is a public corruption scandal. You see, among the little details made public this week at the Leveson Inquiry, which is looking into the press and police and public officials, police knew from the outset that a minister of the previous government was a hacking victim, but told him that he wasn't. Police immediately identified hundreds of hacking targets in the seized files of the private detective who worked for Nice Corp, but later claimed, the police did, they were unaware of them. Police never received key financial evidence or computers from News International, that is to say, Nice Corp. Police tipped off Rebecca Brooks, then editor of The Sun, about the scope of their investigation. That's nice. Police discovered in the private detective's files highly sensitive leaks from within their own ranks that could have endangered people who've been given new identities. An unknown police officer reversed a decision to inform key victims, ensuring a cover-up. And then there's the horse. It was revealed this week that, and horses are nice, it was revealed this week that the police had given a former police horse, retired police horse, named Raisa, to Rebecca Brooks, the editor of The Sun and the apple of Rupert Murdoch's eye. This has emerged as a symbol now of the scandal in Britain. Officials of the Conservative government have first denied any associations between the horse and Prime Minister David Cameron, whose home is close to that of Mrs. Brooks, and her husband Charlie, a close friend of the Prime Minister. Then Cameron's office bumbled around in the face of continued questioning about Raisa before it emerged on Friday that he had in fact been riding with Brooks sometime before assuming office. And Raisa, the former police horse, had indeed been his horse. The symbolic importance is immense, says Anthony King, professor of government at Essex University. You have in one story the prime minister of the country, a Rupert Murdoch crony, the Metropolitan Police, and a horse, which in the UK is itself a symbol of privilege. Murdoch himself defended the prime minister on Twitter. He said, Rebecca Brooks is now being criticized for saving an old horse from the glue factory. She was lent the horse, which she later returned, according to reports, in a poor condition. The horse has since been put down. That is so nice. News of Nice Corp, ladies and gentlemen, and leading directly to the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
And here is that self-same Prime Minister, David Cameron.
On the issue of horses and all the rest of it, I mean, if a confusing picture has emerged over the last few days, I'm very sorry about that. I think my staff have had to answer a lot of questions about horses. Let me try and shed some light on it. Right, I've known Charlie Brooks, the husband of Rebecca Brooks, for over 30 years. He's a good friend, and he's a neighbour in the constituency. We live a few miles apart. I haven't been riding with him since the election, as I said yesterday. Before the election, yes, I did go riding with him. He has a number of different horses, and yes, one of them was this former police horse, Razor, which I did ride. I'm very sorry to hear that Razor is no longer with us, and I think I should probably conclude by saying I don't think I'll be getting back into the saddle anytime soon.
I think he means horses. He's sorry about the horse. Yes, his officials had said earlier this week he has no recollection of ever going riding with Rebecca Brooks. That was changed to it's highly possible he was on that horse. It is likely that he rode that horse, and now, yes, he rode that horse. But he's going to stay out of the saddle. We'll keep an eye on that for you. The Bishop of Down and Connor has apologized to the victims of a pedophile priest who's been jailed for 4 years for sexually abusing two young boys. Bishop Noel Treanor said he regretted the pain and distress caused by Daniel Curran of Newcastle. The offenses took place between 1989 and 1994. It was the fourth time he'd been charged with child abuse. So he's getting it right. Practice makes... Franklin Graham, the evangelist and son of Billy Graham, has apologized for questioning President Obama's Christian faith, insisting that religion has nothing to do with his decision not to support the president's election. I regret any comments I've ever made which may have cast doubt on the personal faith of our president, Graham said in a statement on Tuesday. I apologize to him and to any I have offended for not better articulating my reason for not supporting him in this election, for his faith has nothing to do with my consideration of him as a candidate. Kind of close. In the ballpark. After winning the Best Documentary Award for his work on Undefeated, co-director T.J. Martin mistakenly dropped an ill-fated F-bomb, not foreclosure, on live television, saying it would be effing awesome if his fellow nominees were able to join him on stage. He has apologized for the slip. I want to apologize for that. I don't think that was the classiest thing in the world. On the Oscars? You worried about that? If you start making a list, babe. With that said, it did come from the heart, he adds. It was absolutely spontaneous. There's no way in the world I thought this would ever happen. This is the most insane thing that's ever happened. Really? All right. Former New Orleans Saints defensive coordinator Greg Williams has admitted his role and apologized for his involvement in what the NFL is calling a bounty program. I thought the point of pro football was to injure. I misunderstand. The league said Williams and players offered financial incentives for injuring players from other teams and knocking them out of games. This was going on over the past 3 years, including the Saints' Super Bowl season. It was a terrible mistake, and we knew it was wrong while we were doing it, Greg Williams said. I want to express my sincere regret and apology to the NFL, Saints owner Tom Benson, and the New Orleans Saints for my participation in the pay-for-performance program while I was with the Saints. It was a terrible mistake. We knew it was wrong while we were doing it. Instead of getting caught up in it, I should have stopped it. I take full responsibility for my role. I am sorry, truly sorry. I've learned a hard lesson, and I guarantee I will never participate in or allow this kind of activity to happen again. Unquote. The NFL is now investigating a similar practice when Williams was with the Washington Redskins. Puts the apology into some relief, doesn't it? The Catholic Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. has apologized to a woman who was denied communion during her mother's funeral because she is in a same-sex relationship. Barbara Johnson received apologies from the Reverend Thomas LaHood, who is the pastor of St. John Newman, and the Superior Father Marcel Guarnizo. She also received apologies from two officials of the Archdiocese. In my years as a priest, I've encountered many pastoral situations and know that kindness to those experiencing personal loss is a necessary part of the church's call to clarity. The fact that you do not experience this is a cause of great concern and personal regret to me, unquote. The chief federal judge of Montana has apologized to President Barack Obama in a letter after admitting sending an email containing a racist joke about the president that made a reference to a dog. I sincerely and profusely apologize to you and your family for the email I forwarded. I accept full responsibility. I have no one to blame but myself, he said. Chief District Judge Richard Siebel. I honestly don't know what else I can do. Please forgive me. And again, my most sincere apology. Libyan authorities apologized after video footage emerged showing graves of British servicemen being attacked by armed men in Benghazi. Who do they think they are, the Pentagon? In an interview with Salon, the chairman of President Bush's 2004 re-election campaign says he personally apologizes to people who were harmed by the campaigns in which I was involved. Ken Mailman came out as gay in 2010. I can't change the fact that I wasn't in this place personally when I was in politics. I genuinely regret that. It was very hard personally because he did not push back against the Bush campaign's support for a federal anti-gay marriage amendment. At a personal level, I wish I'd spoken out against the effort. As I've been involved in the fight for marriage equality, one of the things I've learned is how many people were harmed by the campaigns in which I was involved. I apologize to them and tell them I am sorry. And Rush Limbaugh, as I'm sure you all know by now, has apologized. For over 20 years, he says, I've illustrated the absurd with absurdity 5 days a week. In this instance, I chose the wrong words in my analogy of the situation. I did not mean a personal attack on Miss Fluck. That's the young woman who wanted to testify in Congress about the desirability of insurance plans covering birth control. He called her on the air for several days running a slut and a prostitute. And my choice of words was not the best, says Limbaugh, and in the attempt to be humorous, I created a national stir. Now he's bragging. I sincerely apologize to Ms. Fluck for the insulting word choices. He also said that since she was demanding that taxpayers, through insurance, I guess, pay for her to have sex by covering, insurance-wise, her birth control prescription, that she should oblige us by posting sex tapes of herself. He didn't apologize for that. That was not a bad word choice. It just occurred to me that, you know, when he went to detox for his oxycodone addiction, the affliction which almost caused him to go deaf, Mr. Limbaugh might quite possibly, we don't know for sure, have taken advantage of health insurance provided by AFTRA, the Radio TV Performers Union. And I, as a healthy contributor of premiums to that fund, think I'm entitled to hear audio tape of what his detox was like. Don't you? Yes, I do. But it's somewhere else at the moment. We'll have it for you moments from now here on the show.
You're never wrong, so meet me at no special place, and I'll be there at no particular time. Babe, you just ain't common sense, mixing up love with arguments. So meet me at no special place, and I'll be there at no particular time. I'm all fed up on stormy weather, I'm going west, June. Here's hoping I see you never, 'cause if I do, it will be too soon. I'm all fed up on your advice, missing you will be paradise. So meet me at no special place, and I'll be there no particular time. You better bring along your glasses in case I'm hard to find. You'll wish you could see before you as well as you can see behind. One thing a man just can't excuse: you don't like the way I sing the blues. So meet me at no special place, and I'll be there. I'll be right there. I will be there at no particular time.
Okay, we've now found what purports to be tape of Rush in Detox.
Now, from inside an undisclosed treatment facility, the most listened to drug addict in America, on a Rush to Recovery.
Rush Limbaugh.
Greetings, counselors and tough love administrators all across the fruited plain of my mind. With talent on loan from God, and half my brain tied behind my back, just to make it fair for the other half, which is still loaded to the flipping gills, I am your avatar of broadcast turpitude, Rush Limbaugh. I want to thank Roger Hitchcock for taking the reins of my radio broadcast for the next little while. But here in the abstinence and broadcasting building that is my own cerebral cortex, we're embarking on the third of an unknown number of hours in the Limbaugh Institute of Advanced Conservative Revisionism, because, my friends, cold turkey is something far worse than what you eat the day after Thanksgiving. This is a situation that I take full responsibility for, even though it was caused by one stupid housekeeper with a big mouth. And I acknowledge that I have often treated those addicted to or just using drugs with great contempt and lack of compassion, advocating that they should be arrested, tried, and jailed. But my friends, And I wonder at this point if you are, my friends, those weak, undisciplined adherents of a degenerate lifestyle which threatened the very fabric of a God-fearing community had one very dramatic shortfall in their characters. They weren't me. But now I'm not me either. I'm not a conventional air mattress. I'm totally adjustable. Environ-nutsos and feminazis, the homeless and the Democrats who would like nothing better than to have Saddam Hussein as their presidential candidate next year, I love you all. Now, even though I'm not on the air, and this is pretty impressive technology, more impressive than the procedure that restored my hearing after it mysteriously disappeared with no connection to any overuse of prescription medication. We have a caller. I really don't know how this is working, but hello, you're on the AIB network.
Hey, Rush, it's Bill Clinton, long-time target, first-time caller.
President Clinton, I'm really not prepared for this. My mind's only on 3-second delay, so...
Don't worry, man, I'm not going to swear at you. I'm going to do something that's going to make you feel so much worse.
Mm-hmm. What's that, sir? Make me go on a date with Mrs. Clinton?
No, Rush. Mm. I'm going to feel your pain.
Oh, no.
And you're going to feel mine, because I'm going to play a saxophone solo over the telephone. Hold on.
Let's put this call on hold, and let me continue here with my exegesis of my position, because this is important. It's about the future of excellence, or the excellence of the future. And speaking of the future, my next book, I Told You I Was Right and I Was Wrong, is due out shortly after I Am. I really should be working on it right now rather than engaging you, my friends of the brain cell audience, but I have always respected you and given you the benefit of your own thoughts, and now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s, but that's what liberals do, and in my new book, I Told You I Was Writing, I'm a liberal too, because to tell you the truth, at the base of all this, ladies and gentlemen, has been a deep and abiding physical attraction to the late Bella Abzug. You can try her yourself in your own home for 30 days, risk-free. But this is what is gnawing away at the traditional values that hold this country together, my friends, and it is, in fact, my next book. I told you I was gnawing away at the traditional values that hold this country together. We've got another caller. And I want to pay tribute to the engineers here at the Betty Ford Institute for Advanced Nonlinear Studies for putting it through. Hello, you're on the AIB Network on Open Line Friday.
Rush, it's John Ashcroft, and it's Thursday.
Sir, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the call, but it is my hallucination, and that kind of obviates the conventional calendar approach.
Rush, I know you have a lot of time to fill, but mm-hmm. I've got detainees to sort. I just wanted to call up and say God wants his talent back.
You know, Mr. General, I don't believe in coincidence, but I was just writing the other day in the Limbaugh Letter, the most consistently authoritative political newsletter in the history of the known universe, that I don't believe in coincidence. How about that?
Rush, this treatment stuff is the bunk. Why don't you just come over to the Justice Department and sing hymns with us every morning? Have you off the sauce in no time.
Well, Mr. General, thank you very much for the call. I think we're running out of time on the satellite. I am curious about one thing. How did you get this number?
I've been bugging Bill Clinton's calls.
John Ashcroft, ladies and gentlemen, taking the time to connect with the largest audience of time-release narcotic molecules in the history of broadcast access. We're just beginning this excursion into my new book, I Told You I Was White. But we got some bills to pay and some nausea to deal with. And then we will be back with more of the Rush Limbaugh program. So I urge you not to go away. And if you do, please take me with you.
All right, that's what it was like. Ladies and gentlemen, this week we saw the passing of Davy Jones, one of the lead singers of the confected 1960s, 70s pop group, The Monkees. We also saw the passing of conservative provocateur, media provocateur, Andrew Breitbart. And it could be said that the following song is apropos to one or both.
Walking down the street is now a thing of the past. All the folks we meet at last. Left class.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yes, as prefigured earlier in this show, a new report from the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security will fan rather than extinguish the debate over the safety of X-ray body scanners at airports. Senator Susan Collins and other lawmakers have called on TSA to conduct a new independent health study. No such tests were carried out for the IG report, which relied on previous radiation tests. The amount of radiation emitted by the body scanners is negligible and below acceptable limits, according to the report. But the 28-page report also notes that not all TSA screeners have completed required radiation safety training. Inspectors found inconsistencies on how the machines are calibrated to ensure radiation safety, and the TSA made more than 3,500 maintenance calls in the first year the scanners were deployed, meaning on average each machine needed servicing more than once a month. Put your hands up. Put your arms up. Hackers penetrated NASA's computers 13 times last year, including one China-based breach that gained total access to and control of crucial systems and employee accounts at Jet Propulsion Lab. That's according to NASA's Inspector General. Another security failure occurred just a year ago when an unencrypted NASA notebook computer was stolen. It contained algorithms to command and control the International Space Station. No wonder it's been so wobbly lately. The station was never in any jeopardy, said NASA. NASA reported more than 5,400 incidents of malicious software or unauthorized access of its computers between October 1, 2010 and September 30, 2011. That's a year. 5,400 incidents of hacking in a year. Why, that would make Rupert Murdoch proud. News of the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Yeah, I think we can stand that embarrassment.
I know you can, Rube. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, the new F-bomb foreclosure. A former Countrywide financial employee alleges Countrywide, now owned by Bank of America, fraudulently inflated appraisals used for government-insured home loans, according to a complaint unsealed Friday in court in New York. The whistleblower says basically what Eve Smith has said on this program. Chalk one up for Eve. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. For your smartphone, available through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast from KCRW.com. And it'd be just like national news, paying attention to certain appeals court rulings, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast has a Twitter counterpart. Join the 57,000 followers. Come on, followers! Followers? Where are you? At The Harry Shearer. Followers!
We do not have time for this kind of silliness. We got better stuff to do.
Really? Really? You got law students to call? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Uh-oh. Addie's putting on a thong. So long from Santa Monica.